Roots and Branches on VOA Music Mix. I'm Catherine Cole in Washington. My guest today is a Korean-American singer-songwriter from Texas. Her name is Betty Sue, and she's just released When We're Gone. This is her fifth solo disc, and it has been 5 long years since the last one. Will you get us started with a song from the new one?
Take it like a man, take the punches where I stand. There's nothing like growing older to see where the fists are headed before they land. I'm gonna learn to laugh it off, shrug my shoulders when they scoff, and keep on riding when I kick up gravel. Don't need a big truck, 2 wheels are enough. The days grow shorter as the months roll by. Summer's fading soon and the autumn sky's got a cool into its evening sight. I don't feel ready for those winter nights, but I can't change how fast the time flies. I gotta brace these legs, lock my teeth, push these pedals, keep spinning these wheels and wave yesterday goodbye. Could have gone a straighter route, but they all end up headed south. And yeah, no matter which way the water cuts the land, it's gonna meet the ocean at the river's mouth. The days grow shorter as the months roll by. Summer's fading soon and the autumn sky's got a cool wet stain to its evening sigh. I don't feel ready for those winter nights, but I can't change how fast the time flies. Brace these legs, lock my teeth, push these pedals, keep spinning these wheels and wave yesterday goodbye. Well, maybe I'll reach that center line where the summer catches up to the winter time. The sun will work its best to loosen my skin. I'll worry less about the cold and more about the wind. 'Cause I can't change how fast the time flies. I gotta brace these legs, lock my teeth, push these pedals, keep spinning these wheels and wave yesterday goodbye. Ooh, 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 ooh,
Nice way to start things off, Betty Sue.
Thanks. Thank you, Catherine Cole.
It's been a while since you've been here. Maybe since, has it been as long as since your last record? 5 years? Could it be that long?
It might be. It might be. It's been a long time.
The new record is called When We're Gone.
Yes.
That new song? What's it called?
It's called Wheels.
Ah, which is not what I would have guessed from the title.
What was your guess?
When We're Gone, When You're Gone, Life Goes On.
Well, that is kind of the theme of the album, so I guess that makes sense.
Is the title something that comes the absolute last for you?
For songs or for the record?
Let's go songs first.
Songs, usually, I always tell myself that I'm going to, and I have such a hard time titling songs, that I always tell myself I'm going to do that thing that really successful songwriters do, which is to title a song and then work from that. I never succeed at writing that song.
They really do it that way?
So many hit songwriters and successful songwriters. Yeah, they write a title and they figure this is already an interesting concept, so surely it'll make for an interesting song. And then it makes sense that that's the title of the song.
Well, I could see saying this is my idea,
Right.
And going from there. But I can't see saying, this is the title of my song, and then going from there.
I know. Then our brains must work in similar ways because I can't do it. And I've tried. And those end up being kind of the warm-up exercises before I actually start writing something that I keep. I wish I could do it, but I can't. So then I always write a song, and then I really puzzle over what to call it.
Maybe you need to outsource that. Send it to somebody else, like yeah. me, and say, what would you call this song?
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Or to the person that's engineering everything or mastering everything.
Yeah, and maybe titling records, too, because, you know, the last record that I was in here for, nobody ever got the title of the record right. Like, I think maybe 1 in 1,000 times people would actually remember the
yeah,
right.
Yeah, you know something? I can't remember the title, but it had 4 words to it.
It was Heat, Sin, Water, Skin.
That's right.
And 99 times out of 100, somebody would say heart instead of heat.
I think I would always put skin second. Heat, and, skin,
yes.
water, sin, because it just
That's
flowed
how
a
it
little
felt,
bit better.
Yeah. And like the album before that was Little Tiny Secrets, and everybody says Tiny Little Secrets. So apparently I'm no good at titling.
I think not. I think we shouldn't let you title your own albums.
You can
write the songs.
I should not title anything anymore.
You can sing them, but just don't. I just came up with a great idea. You know, you do crowdfunding for some of your
right,
records,
yeah.
you know, like Kickstarter or
right.
Indiegogo or those. You could just have one more slot in there, you know, give me X amount of dollars and I'll let you title a song. You could listen to it when it's done and pick the title. How about that?
You know, I might be open to that because I'm just, you know, I don't have a hard time saying when I'm really not good at something, and titling is something I'm really not good at.
Well, perhaps that's why you're so successful. It's Betty Sue is visiting us from Austin, Texas. For people that weren't here with your last visit and maybe haven't listened when I played your other songs, let's do a little nutshell biography from you. I just said that you were from Austin now, but
yes,
and you are a Texan born and bred.
Actually, I wasn't born in Texas, which, you know, Texans are very nitpicky about this,
yes.
this whole thing. Like if you didn't come from the womb on Texas soil, then you're not a native Texan. My parents actually moved to Texas when I was a baby. So Texas is all I have known, but it is not where I was born.
Where were you born?
I was born in New York.
But you got to Texas as soon as you could.
I got to Texas, yes, as soon as I could. Probably all my steps and all that kind of stuff, you know.
So
the milestones
for everyone except a Texan, you are considered a Texan.
That's
born
right.
and bred.
That's right. Yeah.
You went to school in Texas.
I went to
college in Texas.
Yep.
Now, were you an English major? Did you learn how to write there?
I was an English major, poetry, creative writing, which now I can say has helped me in writing. But when I started songwriting, I didn't think it helped at all. You know, I joke with people that I had like possibly the only major in the world whose career makes less money and has less chance of success than the one that I'm currently doing. Yeah, yeah.
But you didn't come out of college and suddenly become a songwriter. I mean, you got there a little bit late.
I didn't start writing songs until I was, I want to say 26. I think my first album came out when I was 27. So 26, 27, somewhere in there was when I started writing songs. And I just never thought I would be a musician. I grew up in a very musical family. I have 3 sisters and everybody's musical. My mom's very musical. My dad, huge music lover. And but we all played instruments and sang together. But it was just one of those things you do as a well-rounded kid or something, you know, especially as a Korean kid. Like everybody takes piano lessons and, you know, violin or clarinet or flute or something. So we all played multiple instruments. And I graduated out of college, was working at law firms, and I was actually in grad school planning to become a therapist when a friend sat down with me and said, I think everybody knows you want to do music except you. And that kind of changed everything.
You accepted the fact that deep inside of you.
Well, it took me a little while, but yes. After I got over feeling like she was being very presumptuous and rude.
Telling me what I want to do
yeah.
with my
Who
life.
Who are you to tell me what I want to do with my life? But the thing is, she was usually right. She was that kind of person in my life.
The training for being a therapist actually is probably good training for being a songwriter, too. Watching people, listening to them, being aware of what's going on around you.
You know, I really am glad that I had that time in school, even though I didn't finish. Because of that, and because of the time that I spent just learning about all of the backstory to people's lives that we don't see. In college, I was also an education minor, and that was one of those things that you learn about there, too, is just, you know, a kid walks into your classroom and maybe they're acting up. Instead of just addressing the behavior, there's this reminder that you always have to tell yourself that there's more story there than you know. Something could be going on at home, something could be going on in the playground, something could be going on medically, that there's always something more. And I think that informs my writing a lot.
And to look around you and see what's really going on instead of taking everything at face value.
Exactly. And just to know that, you know, every person you encounter, there are deeper stories there. There are scars and painful histories that you might not be the one to hear, but they're there.
And if you can't hear them, maybe you can make them up.
You can make them up. Yeah. It's like when somebody cuts you off on the road and instead of just leaving it at what a jerk, you tell yourself, oh, well, you know, he just found out that his kid got socked in the eye with a softball and he's trying to make it there as fast as possible. There's always the possibility that there's some other story there. And then as soon as you start thinking down that path, then songs kind of emerge.
Ah, so that's the secret to being a songwriter?
Maybe.
Have you given it away?
And try it.
And
go
now
ahead.
We can all do it?
Everybody can do
well,
it.
Well, I'm going to have a growing up question for you, but let's hear another song first.
Okay.
Betty Sue is now picking up this wonderful electric guitar, which looks unlike almost any other electric guitar I've seen in this studio. What is the story behind that one?
This is called a Priscilla guitar. There are only a few of them in the world. Not that it's worth gazillions of dollars because it's not well known. I bought this about 4 or 5 years ago in Amsterdam. It was made in East Germany in the 60s.
Wow.
I've only run into a few guitar collectors who know about them, but they agree that there are only about 3 or 4 of them in the world that are still functional and playing. I have searched on every search engine to try to find where the other ones are just because I just want to tell the other owners, hi, we're in a club together, but I've never seen another one. So
have you put up pictures on guitar websites?
You know, Vintage Guitar magazine expressed interest in this guitar at one point, but I don't think they've written about it yet.
How cool. Well, let's hear it.
Okay.
Last night I saw you. I saw you smile. She smiled too. She smiled at me, she smiled at you. She said something soft, and her hands locked on the crook of your arm. She looked back at me, but you never stopped walking. I called your number, I called your number all night. But you were in the arms of another, the close arms of another last night. Last night. How long does it take? How many breaths in and away does it take for a jealous heart to break? I hungered for the wrong things, the greenest peach, the palest cherry. I always trusted the wrong things. I always treasured the wrong things, the tired rope swing from a crooked tree. And I called your number, I called your number all night. You were night. Oh.
We're visiting with Betty Sue today in the Roots studio. What's the name of that one?
That is called Last Night.
Okay, I was pretty close. I was thinking in my head the whole time because I don't have the CD in front of me. I forgot to bring it down. The new CD is called When We're Gone. The song is Last Night. Yeah. Played on that wonderful East German guitar from the 1960s. And, you know, looking at it, and I'll put a picture up somehow, and you must have one on your website because I know...
Somewhere, yes.
Because since we've been talking about it, people are now going to rush to your website to see a picture of it. So maybe I'll take a picture of you with the guitar when we're done.
And I'll have to put it up.
And you'll have to put it up.
Yes.
Because it really does, now looking at it, it's heavy, it's kind of dark.
Yeah.
And it looks like 1960s East Germany, what I would expect a guitar from that time to look like.
Yeah, it's so solid. It's like a tank.
And if people want to find you online, I better spell your name because they may think it's S-U-E, but Betty Sue's name is spelled Betty, B-E-T-T-Y-S-O-O. Because as you said earlier, you're Korean, Korean-American. You're first generation. Your parents were not born here in the U.S.
Right.
How old were they when they both came here?
Let's see. They were, I think my dad was 33, so my mom must have been 28 when they came over.
So they were grown up and
educated.
Grown
up, yep. They'd already finished college and everything in Korea. And my oldest sister was born in Korea. And then my next sister was born in the States. And then myself and my younger sister.
And then they made their way with one little stop in New York to Texas. What made them go to Texas?
They're both physicians. Mm-hmm. And they heard that Houston had a kind of a growing medical community and that it was ethnically diverse and
both true,
and I think they were ready to take that chance, and they're still there. They're still in Houston,
so they picked the right place.
They did
for them at least.
They really love it.
So growing up in a Korean American family, every kid had music classes, and you know, you went to school, and did you sing outside of home? Did you sing in church or at school? Or
I did not sing at school. For some reason I was very shy about with my school friends, letting them know that I could sing. But at church, we were really active and sang in church a lot. And so some of my church friends, you know, I would sing at their weddings or I would sing solos at church and that kind of thing. And when I was little, I actually was part of this singing group where there were three or four of us kids who would sing for textbook companies. So we'd sing those little children's songs that, you know, they'd set in the LP to the elementary schools, and then kids would learn the songs from them. So we sang in our little children voices. I did that for a few years. And so I guess that was my first paying gig. Yeah.
But it didn't make you say at the time, Mom, Dad, I want to be a musician. Because I guess it's hard enough in most families in the U.S., especially when your parents want you to go to college, to say, well, really, Mom, Dad, I don't want to be a doctor. I want to be a singer. Now, I would think from what I know from my friends, in a Korean-American family, it might be a little bit tougher.
Yes.
Did they want you to be a doctor or a professor?
They didn't want me to be a doctor. My parents were enough like the typical Korean parents that we did not feel like we were going to be musicians. But they were different. They still really encouraged studying hard and wanted us to get straight A's and, you know, that whole thing. But they weren't nearly as strict as a lot of my friends' parents. They always said, don't become a doctor or a lawyer or something because you want to please us. Of all of the things that you were interested, choose one of those things. Because if not, you're going to wait till we die and then you'll resent it and it'll be too late to pursue those things.
Wow.
So she said, you know, there are lots of things that you might be interested in. Choose one of those. When they moved to the States in the early 70s, they faced a lot of discrimination. I mean, just a lot of outright racism. And it's interesting, over the years when I talk with them, it gets softened year by year. So that now they would probably say they really didn't face any. But I remember the stories, and I remember as a kid some of the things that happened. And so the one thing that they really encouraged us to do was to have a job where you had some kind of license or certificate so that nobody could tell you that you couldn't get that job. So they didn't care how much it paid. I was planning at first, while I was in school, to be an English teacher. And they didn't care that it didn't make a lot of money. They just knew that I would have a teaching certificate and I could get a job that nobody could deny me. And and the other thing that went into my not thinking I was going to be a musician was that my oldest sister was and is extremely talented. So talented, in fact, that she was winning concerto competitions, competing with people much older than her by the time she was in middle school, and playing Chopin with the symphony and that kind of thing. So her talent was so immense, and I was pretty pitiful piano player and not really nearly as disciplined as she was either. And part of it was because I knew no matter how much I practiced, I wasn't going to be like that. Mm. And she already, growing up, felt the pressure of knowing that her chances were extremely slim of ever making it in music. And so even though it wasn't really talked about, there was just kind of that understanding that that's just not possible. If this other person who is much better than I am kind of knows she's not going to make it, then
what chance do I have?
Yeah, and it's not even a conscious thought like, what chance do I have? It's just, it's so far removed from any kind of reality.
So what happened?
Well, that summer, my friend had that conversation with me and said, you know, everybody knows you want to do music. I figured, okay, well, I can play a little bit of guitar. It was very crude, and I could sing. And I had never written a song, and I knew that I could not write songs. So I took a songwriting class with the sole purpose of meeting some hungry songwriters who needed to meet singers. And I thought, oh, I'll just like find somebody in this songwriting class who wants to write songs for me. But, you know, part of the deal of taking class, you got to bring in your homework. So I brought in my very first song. Everybody liked it. And I thought, oh, maybe I can do this.
Do you remember it?
Yes. Well, I couldn't play it. But I remember what it was.
All right.
But it is on my first album. And it's called Family Man.
Was it difficult to write that first song?
It was like four or five meetings on Saturday mornings. They were these informal workshops that lasted maybe 2 hours or something. I think it was the third class in that we were supposed to bring in a song. I was sitting down at our dining table eating breakfast, and I suddenly realized, oh no, I'm supposed to bring a song in today, and I have nothing. And I just typed something, printed off my 15 copies, and went to class.
Was the second one any easier or harder to write now that you had one under your belt?
Easier.
Okay.
It became easier. And I still kind of work that way, where having a deadline and writing quickly is helpful to me. And then I tend to edit a little bit, but I have a pretty short cycle on songs. If something isn't clicking with me, even if I think it's a great idea, I don't often return to it, just because by the time I probably would be returning to it, I have new ideas.
I'm Catherine Cole, talking with Betty Sue this week. She is visiting us from Austin. More live music and conversation is coming up. You are listening to Roots and Branches on the VOA Music Mix Network. Well, hello again from Washington. I'm Catherine Cole. This is Roots and Branches on VOA Music Mix. I am visiting with Betty Sue this week. She is here from Austin, guitar, or maybe I should say guitars in hand, talking about her new CD, When We're Gone. It's her first solo disc in 5 years, and I am going to request another song I want you to play one using that funky East German electric guitar of yours.
Lungs collapsing, eyes stinging, but your heart was diving deep, 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 deep.
Betty Sue is visiting from Austin, Texas, in the Root Studio today. We're talking about her CD, When We're Gone. And just a couple of minutes ago, you were saying when you started as a songwriter, you weren't much of a guitar player, and you were just hoping that somebody, you'd run into somebody who was writing songs so you could sing them.
Right.
Now, obviously, somewhere along the line, you realized you had to learn to play.
Yeah.
When was that?
That was pretty early on. I realized, you know, when you're starting out, you really... Well, maybe not everybody does, but I figured I needed to start playing solo shows and stuff. And I had picked up a guitar in college and just knew a couple chords, really, and just started practicing.
What were you writing on if you only knew a couple of chords?
Well,
how were you writing songs?
You know, that's actually probably mostly how I learned to play guitar, was by hearing something in my head and then needing to find it. Mm. On this instrument and needing to find out
how to make that sound
that I heard. Exactly. I'll be returning this summer to a guitar camp in Alaska that I went and taught at it a few years ago, not teaching guitar, but but all of the guitar students and the guitar teachers will look at some of the things that I do on guitar that I don't think of as strange at all, and they're like, why do you finger it that way? Or why do you play it like that? You should do this. And I, oh, that's much easier. But it's because I just hunted down those notes and played them.
Don't try this at home, in other words,
exactly.
When people are watching you.
Don't take this video as a guitar lesson. It's a very bad guitar lesson.
There you were in your first songwriting class. You were writing songs. You were still in grad school at the time.
Right.
At what point did you say to yourself, okay, this is my calling. Forget this trying to be a therapist or teaching school business. I, Betty Sue, am a singer-songwriter and I'm going on the road.
It was pretty quick. I was fortunate enough to be married to a wonderful man who I'm still married to, and Dave understood. And I said, okay, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it all the way. It's a decision we have to make together because it's a lifestyle thing. If you have a problem with the idea of me going on the road, being gone for long stretches of time, or being out late because he's really kind of a homebody, then I'm going to go for it. And if we decide that that's not what we want our life to look like, then I'm not going to bother. And he said, how can I say no? And not in a arm-twisted way, but he agreed that it was what I really was most passionate about doing. And so we just decided we had to figure out how to make it work. And I quit grad school pretty soon after we just decided this, pretty quickly into those first songs of mine. And I switched out to just having a part-time job in Austin. I remember I worked for this little insurance agency in Austin. I went in for the interview to be a part-time receptionist. I was really honest with my potential boss, and I said, I'm really trying to be a musician. I'm really trying to be a singer-songwriter. There will be times of the year that I might need to take off and do that. And whenever I am here, I will try to be the best employee, but I don't want you to think that I have a passion for being an insurance receptionist. And he was okay with that. He accepted it and hired me. And that really helped make the whole thing work.
Having that support,
having that kind of understanding around me. I mean, my family was supportive. My husband was supportive. My boss was supportive. Having everybody learn alongside me what that life was going to look like, but all being for it, that was a pretty big thing.
So your parents were not the stereotypical Korean-American parents that we would think would say, I'm disowning you, my daughter.
Right, no. There were a couple times, like maybe a year or two into it, that they said something like, how long are you going to do this? But it wasn't meant to be a discouragement. It was just, they wondered, are you doing this to try it out for a while, or is this a lifelong thing? But they come to my shows whenever I play in Houston. They wear my t-shirts and they buy CDs for friends of theirs. And they've been very pleased with it. So it's nice to have that.
It's worked out well.
It has. I feel very fortunate.
The first time I heard of you, it was in a press release where you were winning songwriting contests. How long did it take for you to be Betty Sue, the part-time insurance receptionist and fledgling songwriter, to winning the Kerrville songwriting contest?
So I wrote my first song in 2004, which came out on a record in 2005. So I didn't really start getting any kind of press and being able to play stuff until about 2005 because, you know, you need to have something to give people. And Kerrville and a bunch of those contests happened in 2008 or so. So it was about a 3-year mark there. And 2007 or 8 was when I stopped having another job.
That's very fast, actually, to go from neophyte
hitting
your stride on the scene.
It's true. It didn't feel like fast, but in retrospect, yeah.
Because there's a lot of work that goes into that. I mean, you have to learn your craft.
And learn so many other things. And I was really grateful to be in Austin where so many people would share skills. I mean, people taught me how to write press releases, how to do publicity, how to book shows, the art of performance. I mean, all kinds of things. And it wasn't necessarily sit down and teach you, but you were surrounded by it. And you were surrounded by people who did it well and people who didn't do it well. And that was a really great education.
Do you find yourself giving that back?
Oh, yeah. One of the things that I really try to do intentionally is anytime that there's a musician who's like a singer-songwriter who's starting out, I always try to make myself available for coffee or for something. And I usually tell them, hey, carve out a few hours. And I just bring them like my publicity materials and just show them why it's structured the way it is. Or I'll give them some contacts. Or if I really think one of their songs or some of their music would really move a writer that I know, then I'll send it to them. Actually, right now, I'm in the process of helping to produce a friend's CD. One of my college roommates, actually,
wow,
is trying to make her first album. And so I've been working with her on figuring out the budget for her album and helping her to edit a lot of her songs and just kind of walk through that whole process and helped her choose which photos to put on her website and that kind of thing. At the beginning, it just feels like there's too much that you don't know, and then you don't even know what you don't know. You know, there's so much to know. And I mean, I guess there are now resources, you know, whether it's online or in books or in seminars or workshops where people can kind of learn how to do this thing. But I don't think people who are trying to chase a dream should have to pay thousands of dollars to learn how to do it. I mean, the rest of the career already costs thousands of dollars. So
let's have another song.
Okay. Okay. Here's the title song to the record.
When we're gone, they're gonna find yellow letters scrawled with promises from older days, pictures tucked between poems with faces they can't name, tokens of love in pockets and boxes, a ring you never threw away, a turquoise pin on a yellow scarf, tarnished silver heart on a cheap brass chain. When we're gone, they're gonna see all the things we held on to from our hearts' broken histories. When I go, let them be, leave them behind in that house when you come to me when we're gone. Black leather jacket with a cat scratch on its shoulder, an oval mirror engraved inside with "Let's grow older together," a paperback that lost its ending when it lost its cover, but the title page read to my sad girl just under the good soldier. When we're gone, we're gonna see all the things we held on to from our hearts' broken history. When I go, let them be, leave them behind in that house when you come to me when we're gone. When we're gone. When
We're Gone is the title track to Betty Sue's newest CD. And again, if you're looking for her online, the name is spelled BETTYSOO. And we were just talking about, you know, you're lending a hand to people getting started now, especially those in Austin. Do you think that there is any city in the U.S. now with a community quite like Austin? I mean, it seems so giving.
It really is. I think the east side of Nashville is kind of having a wellspring. A lot of musicians moving over there, and they seem to have a great community happening. But I think overall for the entire city of Austin, it's pretty unique because it's such a collaborative, non-competitive city. Musicians there really share opportunities, and I don't really see that happening in other places. I mean, sure, it happens in small pockets, but maybe it's not such a defining characteristic of other music cities. Like, you know, I remember a few years ago there was some TV show coming out and they were gonna feature Texas singer-songwriters, and a couple of us had heard about it. Like, they had given us an invitation, and it seemed like it was a pretty open invitation. So all of us ended up calling about eight of our friends each and said, "Hey, there's like this show that wants to feature like a couple of Texas musicians, and they're kind of doing a, you know, a meet and greet, and come with me. And the idea is, you know, I might not be right for this opportunity, but if somebody's going to get it, I hope it's one of my friends. And I think that's a pretty unique thing about Austin. I'm not going to tell anybody about this because I want the best shot at getting it. We're just not like that.
It seems so collaborative every time that I've visited, and you just don't get that feeling every place else.
Yeah, yeah. And there's such a culture of going out to each other's shows, which, you know, I've got friends. friends whom I love very much in other music cities, but I don't think they do that quite as much. I don't think they really support each other's shows quite in the way that Austin musicians do.
Well, it sounds bucolic and wonderful, and everybody should go visit at some point in their life, but not during South by Southwest.
Not during South by Southwest, yeah.
Now, this last album, you did a crowdfunding to help get it paid for. Was that a surprise for you, how well that worked out?
It was so scary, and I've done very limited scale pre-order kind of things on my website on my own in the past, and having to make or break with a goal was so stressful. I can't even say stressful. It was distressing is what it was. I had never obsessed about thinking about one thing so much for 60 days of my life. To be honest, as much good as came out of it, I just don't know if I could do that again. It was so filled with terror every day that, you know, you'd have a good day and then you'd have a day where nothing came in. And so then all of a sudden your whole like idea of how much you should be pacing, you know, how much each day should be bringing in, just got scary.
Because the way some of these sites work, you set a goal and if you don't reach it, you get nothing.
Right.
Even if you're 5 cents too short, you get nothing. 5 cents
shy, you get nothing. Yeah. And that's the whole deal. And I think in some ways it spurs people to give because they know. They want to see it happen and they don't want you to get nothing. But it was scary. It was scary. I know some people really enjoy the process and enjoy rallying the troops kind of thing. But I have a very easy time being a cheerleader for somebody else, and I have an extremely difficult time being a cheerleader for myself. And it was very hard for me to ask people for money.
Well, self-promotion is difficult. That's when you call out your friends.
Yes.
To do it for you, right?
Yes.
You set it up that way, where they can come to the site and write these wonderful testimonials. Betty Sue is the most fabulous singer and songwriter I've ever met. And you don't know what you're missing if we don't get this CD produced. Imagine what you'll be missing.
Right. And I'm so grateful. I had a lot of friends who shared it, emailed it to other people, and posted on Facebook or did other things. It was really, I couldn't have done it without that.
Speaking of Facebook, you're very clever when it comes to the pictures and Twitter and all that.
Thank you.
You really interact with all your fans and the community at large. Is that a big part of your job?
It is. It is. I think I don't really see the point in doing what I do if I'm not going to connect with people. I mean, I want the songs to connect with people. But I try to write songs that are about getting to know the other story. And so getting to know a lot of people on the road, you know, I might not remember their name, but I'll remember a lot of their stories. I mean, I don't think it's just part of my job. I think as a songwriter, but I think it's part of my job as a human is just to try to be as relational as possible and to try to be there when people need to feel like you're there for them, you know, and sometimes it's, you know, a little interaction on Facebook and sometimes it's somebody who wants to talk with you after a show or whatever. But, you know, the reason they're coming up to the table and not just going to their car is because they feel a need to connect with you personally. And, you know, I think not just as a musician, but in life, if you've made that a reasonable expectation, then it's your job to be there for people.
Well, I would love one more song and then we'll let you go.
Okay. Do you have any requests?
No, not at all. Your choice.
Okay.
We'll make it easy on you. You've played all the ones I want to hear. I love the last one with this, especially the line about the cat scratches on the leather jacket shoulders.
That was a real jacket of mine.
And a real cat.
And
yours.
A real cat. It was somebody else's cat. That's why the scratch bothered me.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, let's see. What do I want to do?
It doesn't have to be from your new album. You could play anything you want. If there's a song you particularly love.
This is a song by Butch Hancock, a friend of mine who lives just outside of Austin, Texas. He still tours for many years with Joe Ely and Jimmy Dale Gilmore in a group called the Flatlanders. He also does his solo work and travels with his son, who is now playing. Rory is playing guitar with him, and he's fabulous. And such a wonderful human being.
Last time I saw him, he was about 9 years old.
And a whiz at the yo-yo. Yeah. Yes. Well, now he's a whiz at the guitar.
Oh.
And still
they all
as
grow up so
I know,
fast.
And still as sweet a human being as he ever was. Butch Hancock is one of my favorite songwriters ever and one of my favorite performers and really a lovely, lovely person. So this is a song of his that I kind of reinterpreted. It's probably one of his most covered songs, but I felt like nobody had quite done it like this. It's called Boxcars.
All my money to the banker today. Now I got no more money to spend. The banker smiled when I walked through the door, and when I left he said, come back again. And I watched those lonesome boxcar wheels turn down the tracks out of town. And it's on those lonesome railroad tracks I'm gonna lay my burden down. Well, I looked for my old man at the lost and found, but he'd already been claimed, and I'm gonna find me another ticket to ride through a town that ain't never been named. Well, nobody cares where I'm going tonight. And darling, if the truth be told, I'm going down to that railroad track and watch the lonesome boxcars roll. Dirty dog death will stay out of my way. Well, this world, it can take my money and it can take my time, but it sure can't take my soul. So I'm going down to the railroad track and watch them lonesome boxcars roll. Searching for that needle all night. Well, there ain't gonna be no radio tires turning down the streets of gold. So I'm going down to that railroad track and watch some lonesome boxcars roll. Thank you.
fast freight train, beating out a beautiful tune. And if you've ever seen that cold blue railroad track shining by the light of the moon, and if you've ever felt that locomotive shake the ground, well, I know you don't to be told why I'm going down to that railroad track, why I'm going down to that railroad track, oh, why I'm going down to that railroad track and watch them
a nice little twist on Boxcars.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for coming by.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I hope it's not another 5 years before you stop by again.
Me too.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the program and my visit with Betty Sue. If you're looking for her online, remember that her name is spelled BETTYSOO. If you'd like to get in touch with me, the email address is roots@voa.gov. That is roots@voa.gov. I'm Catherine Cole. This is Roots and Branches on the VOA Music Mix Network.